12.
Thanks, 10-4.
You're listening to radio news about radio waves. Headlines from the ether. You're tuned to This Week in Radio News. I'm Tom Rowe in the Wave Farm Study Center in upstate New York. The Federal Communications Commission will vote October 22nd on whether to limit rates and fees for phone calls made by prison and jail inmates. The proposal would cap rates at 11 cents per minute for debit prepaid calls in state or federal prisons, 14 cents a minute for debit prepaid calls in jails with 1,000 or more inmates, 16 cents a minute for debit prepaid calls in jails with between 350 and 999 inmates, and 22 cents a minute for debit prepaid calls in jails of up to 349 inmates. Rates for collect calls will be slightly higher in the first year under the plan and will be phased down to these caps after a two-year transition period. The New York Times reports phone calls from jails and prisons can cost as much as $14 a minute, with service fees often adding another 40%. The FCC will vote on the measure at its October 22nd open meeting, which includes a live webcast. You can go to fcc.gov for the full proposal and that live webcast on October 22nd. Ewan McCaskill in The Guardian reports that the U.S. Justice Department has not contacted Edward Snowden about a plea deal. The whistleblower said in an interview with the BBC, quote, "We are still waiting for them to call us back," unquote, he said. Former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder recently said Snowden's revelations had, quote, "spurred a necessary debate," unquote. But former National Security Administration head Michael Hayden was asked by the BBC what should happen to Snowden now for leaking national security information, and he said, quote, "If you're asking me my opinion, he's going to die in Moscow. He's not coming home," unquote. Snowden says, quote, "I volunteered to go to prison with the government many times. What I won't do is I won't serve as a deterrent to people trying to do the right thing in difficult situations," unquote. Snowden, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Glenn Greenwald, Brazilian privacy activist David Miranda, and others recently proposed an international treaty on the right to privacy protection against improper surveillance and protection of whistleblowers that would require states to ban mass data collection and implement public oversight of national security programs. No wonder the media is not liked or trusted. Listen to this report about Edward Snowden joining Twitter. It's from CNN Headline News. Listen carefully, as the host obviously is not listening that carefully.
Thanks, Melissa. We are in search mode because Edward Snowden has joined Twitter, and in less than 24 hours, he's close to 1 million followers. His first tweet reads this: "Can you hear me now? Well, apparently everybody could." That tweet got more than 99,000 retweets and more than 90,000 favorites. So joining me now, John Hendren, who supports Edward Snowden. John, Twitter, they shut down ISIS account. Why do you think Snowden is any different, according to Pataki?
Oh, well, he's a hero. I mean, he's doing what any one of us should have done in that situation. He's got a voice. He's been isolated for so long. He's got valid things to say. I mean, we should listen to what he says.
But some people don't think he's a hero.
Well, they're wrong. I mean, he's doing the most patriotic possible thing.
All right, listen, some people are also saying Snowden's actions could have been harmful. I want to take a listen to John Oliver from back when, and then we'll talk about it.
The New York Times took a slide, didn't redact it properly, and in the end, it was possible for people to see that something was being used in Mosul on Al-Qaeda.
That is a problem. It is, and these things do happen in reporting. In journalism, we have to accept that some mistakes will be made. This is a fundamental concept of liberty.
Right, but you have to own that then. You're giving documents with information you know could be harmful, which could get out there.
Yes.
There is classified information out there that John Oliver was referring to that was released that could have feasibly harmed people. Do you think Snowden's actions were worth that risk?
Well, you know, to say that he couldn't harm somebody, you know, with what he did, like he could, absolutely he could have. But I think to cast him out to make him invalid in society, simply because he has scissors for hands. I mean, that's so strange because, I mean, people didn't get scared until he started sculpting shrubs into dinosaur shapes and whatnot.
All right, well, now Snowden's living in Russia. At Chris Zapp tweeted this: Dear Edward Snowden, what do you make of the massive Russian misinformation campaign going on? Listen, some people say it's hypocritical that Snowden has asylum in Russia. Russia has a lot of human rights violations.
Well, yeah, casting him out is just completely wrong. We're treating him like an animal, like somebody who should be quarantined and put away. Just because he was created on top of a mountain by Vincent Price and incomplete with scissors for hands and no heart, Edward Scissorhands is a complete hero to me.
But what about the choice that he made to live in a country like Russia?
I mean, where else is he going to go? You know, we cast him out. Like, we got scared when he poked a hole in a waterbed with his scissor finger. Like, that was just unreasonable of us.
Well, John, I appreciate you giving us your opinion. Thank you.
No, thanks.
Listen, for more of what Snowden has tweeted and other celebrities' first tweets, go to HLNTV.com. And by the way, Google's first tweet is by far and away my favorite, so make sure to check it out.
I was on the outskirts of a little southern town, trying to reach my destination before the sun went down. The old CB was blaring away on channel 19 when there came a little boy's voice on the radio line. And he said, "Breaker 19, is anyone there? Come on back, truckers, and talk to Teddy Bear." Well, I keyed the mic and I said, "You got it, Teddy Bear." And the little boy's voice came back on the air. "Appreciate the break. Who we got on that end?" I told him my handle and then he began. "Now, I'm not supposed to bother you fellas out there. Mom says you're busy and for me to stay off there. But you see, I get lonely and it helps to talk. 'Cause that's about all I can do. I'm crippled and I can't walk." I came back and told him to fire up that mic, and I'd talk to him as long as he liked. "This was my dad's radio," the little boy said, "but I guess it's mine and Mom's now, 'cause my daddy's dead. Dad had a wreck about a month ago. He was trying to get home in a blinding snow. Mom has to work now to make ends meet, and I'm not much help with my two crippled feet. She says not to worry, that we'll make it all right, but I hear her crying sometimes late at night. You know, there's one thing I want more than anything else to see. Oh, I know you guys are too busy to bother with me, but you see, my dad used to take me for rides when he was home. But I guess that's all over now since my daddy's gone." Not one breaker came on the old CB as that little crippled boy talked with me. I tried hard to swallow a lump that just wouldn't stay down, as I thought about my boy back in Greenville town. Dad was going to take Mom and me with him later on this year. Well, I remember him saying, "Someday this old truck will be yours, Teddy Bear. But I know I'll never get to ride an 18-wheeler again. But this old base will keep me in touch with all my trucker friends. Teddy Bear's going to back on out now and leave you alone, 'cause it's about time for Mom to come home. But you give me a shout when you're passing through, and I'll sure be happy to come back to you." Well, I came back and I said, "Before you go, 1010, what's your home 20, little CB friend?" Well, he gave me his address and I didn't once hesitate, 'cause this hot load of freight is just going to have to wait. I turned that truck around on a dime and headed straight for Jackson Street 229. And as I rounded the corner, oh, I got one heck of a shock. 18-wheelers were lined up for three city blocks. Well, I guess every driver for miles around had caught Teddy Bear's call. And that little crippled boy was having a ball. For as fast as one driver would carry him in, Another would carry him to his truck and take off again. Well, you better believe I took my turn at riding Teddy Bear. And then I carried him back in and put him down in his chair. And buddy, if I never live to see happiness again, I want you to know I saw it that day in the face of that little man. We took up a collection for him before his mama got home. And each driver said goodbye, and then they were all gone. He shook my hand with a mile-long grin and said, "So long, trucker. I'll catch you again." Well, I hit that interstate with tears in my eyes. I turned on the radio and I got another surprise. Breaker 19 came a voice on the air. Just one word of thanks from Mama Teddy Bear. We wish each and every one a special prayer for you, 'cause you just made my little boy's dream come true. I'll sign off now before I start to cry. May God ride with you. 10-4. Goodbye.
The Federal Communications Commission recently approved the new Citizens Broadband Radio Service, sort of digital version of the CB radios that became a fad in the mid-1970s and are still used by truck drivers today. The CBRS takes over frequencies between 3.5 and 3.7 gigahertz that have traditionally been reserved for military radar and satellite uplinks. Now the FCC will attempt to set up a system that automatically assigns users to open frequencies with a control database mechanism known as the Spectrum Access System. Instead of U.S. military radar taking valuable spectrum to itself, whether it was using it or not, this new system allows much more public access to its own airwaves. Much of the anticipated use of the new system is expected to be from unlicensed wireless, allowing experiments with small-scale mesh networks. 8 groups or companies have petitioned the FCC asking for adjustments to the new system. These include petitions from CTI, the Wireless Association, Verizon, Motorola Solutions, Nokia Networks, the Satellite Industry Association, the National Association of Broadcasters, and John M. Peha, a professor at Carnegie Mellon University and a former FCC chief technologist. The Communications Law blog outlines each requested change and links to the petitions and reports that the public can comment on any or all of the petitions until October 19, 2015 at FCC.gov. This is Tom Rowe reporting for Waveform Radio and WGXC. Matthew Lazar at Radio Survivor reports that the BBC World Service is accepting scripts for its 25th International Radio Play Competition. Quote, anyone over 18 living outside the United Kingdom, whether you are a new or established writer, unquote, can send a 53-minute long radio script that includes no more than 6 central characters, plus a synopsis no longer than 400 words. Scripts compete for an English as a First Language prize, or an English as a Second Language prize, and the Georgi Markov Prize for scripts that show, quote, outstanding potential, unquote. The BBC is the most widely distributed audio platform on Earth, so this is a chance to reach a truly global audience. With a January 31st, 2016 deadline, click at newsroom.free103.9.org for the link to the BBC's rules and prize information if you're interested. I'm Tom Rowe for Waveform Radio and WGXC. David Oxenford in the Broadcast Law blog reports that industry representatives and FCC officials keep saying that the only way to fix AM radio is by broadcasting AM signals on FM radio. FCC commissioners with fond memories of growing up with AM radio want to help bring that format back, a fool's errand since AM's sonic limitations don't make it of much use for music programming. But if AM owners could just broadcast on FM, then AM would be saved, is the logic from Washington, D.C. these days. The latest proposal would allow AM station licensees to buy FM translators located as far as 250 miles away from the AM station, and then move the translator to an area where the station can be rebroadcast on FM. So buying a translator station gives that licensee the right to file for a vacant frequency in its market on a first-come, first-served basis. Class C and D AM stations may get first shot at the translator stations if word about the plan is correct. This Halloween marks the 77th anniversary of Orson Welles and the Mercury Players' version of H.G. Wells' The War of the Worlds. Supposedly, The radio broadcast scared audiences nationwide, but Wells' better performance may have been the press conference the following day. Let's listen back to that press conference.
Psychological reason, back.
I simply don't know. I can't imagine. I mean, you must realize that when I left the broadcast last night, I went into a dress rehearsal for a play that's opening in 2 days, and I've had almost no sleep, and I know less about this than you do. I haven't read the papers.
What was the first thing you had that something was wrong?
After the
you were aware of terror at the time you were giving this role. Were you aware that terror was going on throughout the nation?
Oh, no, of course not. We did Dracula, and it seemed to me during Dracula I had high hopes that people would react as they do in a movie of that kind, and I don't know that they did particularly, and so I've given up. One doesn't believe in the radio audience much. You don't know that they're whether they're listening or not. You have no idea how many people are listening and what they're thinking. I had every hope that that the people would be excited as they would be at a melodrama.
But,
tone down the. Do it again, but you don't. You don't. Play down the melodramatic effect of a melodrama.
Have you altered your plans for future problems in any way as a result of this incident?
Naturally, we will have to sit down and think very carefully about future broadcasts.
Have you made any specific changes in any programs that were already scheduled, such as next week, for instance?
No.
Mr. Wells,
three short stories.
When you're in the service for a bird on Patera, when you speak about rations that you feel in particular, listening in on this program would know that there was no such thing as Martians.
Well, it would seem to me unlikely that the people of an invasion from Mars would find ready acceptance. I was frankly terribly shocked to learn that it did.
Do
you
believe in
men from Mars
yourself? No. But primarily
I'm
primarily the...
Mr. Wells, why did you use local towns in this program?
Well, H.G. Wells uses local towns addressing an English audience. I was addressing an American audience, so the transplantation is quite logical, it seems to me. He doesn't use mythical towns. He uses quite real ones.
That was a mythical town, wasn't it?
It was a mythical town, but it was near enough. It was near enough to a real name. I've forgotten how we figured it out. It's either that it's Grover's Mills, or it is Grove's Mill, or something. And at any rate, we changed it slightly, hoping that would a thing which H.G. Wells did not do. His names are quite real English towns, without any change name.
I came down from the
camera. Yes. Towards the camera.
We've asked you that before.
Ask it loud. Very loud.
Do you think, Mr. Wells, that you might have taken unfair advantage of the public in using a method as a conveyance for authentic news?
I don't believe that I have, since it is not a method original with me. It is used by many radio programs. I am terribly shocked by the effect it's had. I do not believe that the method is original with me or peculiar to the Mercury Theater's presentation.
Do you think there ought to be a law against such enactments as we had last night, or as a result of that?
I don't know what the legislation would be. I know that almost everybody in radio would do almost anything to avert the kind of thing that has happened, myself included, but I don't know what the legislation would be. Radio is new, and we are learning about the effect it has on people. Learned a terrible lesson.
Do you think that this will cause the curbing of radio bulletins on the air today?
I simply can't imagine. It seems to me that the effects of this may cause much legislation. I simply don't know. The wisdom of radio executives and of an organized public will decide these things for us. It's not up to me to speak. I'm the accused.
I was in Europe at the time that Schuschnigg was murdered, and I remember very vividly the time, the way that came through the air. I should say that your presentation last night was even more dramatic and more realistic than the way the Vienna radio station did theirs.
Yes, the intention...
In view of that, don't you think that somebody here would have been able to gauge the reaction which in fact has occurred throughout the United States?
Well, every radio program tries to be more dramatic than life, as every play tries to be more dramatic than life, and every movie, not less so. I would have been surprised if hurt, as anybody would, if they'd been told that a presentation was less effective than life.
You're all good.
It's quiet. Do you want me to speak now? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Of course, we are deeply shocked and deeply regretful about the results of last night's broadcast. The date of the broadcast was 1939, and it seemed, came rather as a great surprise to us that a story, the fine H.G. Wells classic fantasy, the original for so many succeeding comic strips and adventure stories and novels, about a mythical invasion by monsters from the planet Mars, should have had so profound an effect upon radio listeners. The date of the broadcast was clearly stated as being 1939. Came, of course, as a great shock to us that the old H.G. Wells fantasy, the classic original for so many adventure stories, romances, and even comic strips, should have so profound an effect upon radio listeners. The invasion by mythical monsters from the planet Mars seemed to us to be clearly in the realm of the fairy tale. Deeply regretful that this is not so.
That was Orson Welles' press conference the day after the War of the Worlds broadcast in 1938. Next up is a 1940 broadcast, Orson Welles talking with author H.G. Wells on a San Antonio radio station.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Charles C. Shaw speaking. KTSA is honored this evening by the presence in our studios of two great men, the Honorable H.G. Wells, world-famous British historian, author, and student of world affairs, and Mr. Orson Welles, the genius of stage, screen, and radio. This is the first time that Mr. H.G. Wells and Mr. Orson Welles have appeared together. In fact, they met for the first time only yesterday here in San Antonio. But this is not the first time that their names have been linked. 2 years ago, Mr. Orson Welles adapted Mr. H.G. Wells' book, War of the Worlds, for radio purposes, and you know the rest. Revising the story somewhat, Mr. Orson Welles depicted an invasion of the United States by men from Mars. Although he explained numerous times during the program that it was fictitious, the country at large was frightened almost out of its wits. Men called radio stations offering to enlist against the Martians. Others were panic-stricken. The realism of the production, frightening though it was a tribute to Mr. Orson Welles' genius. And thus the name of Welles, H-G-W-E-L-L-S, and Orson W-E-L-L-E-S, became linked. Mr. H.G. Wells, in the opinion of many, is the world's most famous man of letters. He has come to San Antonio to address the United States Brewers Association, and Mr. Orson Welles is here for a town hall forum address Wednesday. In this meeting of great minds, I feel rather inconspicuous, and the less I have to say, the better you listeners will like it. But first, could I interest you gentlemen in a discussion of Mr. Orson Welles' broadcast of Mr. H.G. Wells' book, The War of the Worlds?
You're turning the meeting over to us, sir?
I am, for the moment.
He's turning it over to us. Well, I've had a series of the most delightful experiences since I came to America. But the best thing that has happened so far is meeting my little namesake here, Orson. I find him the most delightful carrier. He carries my name and an extra E that I hope he'll drop sooner or later. See no sense in it. And I've known his work before he made this sensational Halloween spree. Are you sure there was such a panic in America, or wasn't it your Halloween fun?
I think that's the nicest thing that a man from England could possibly say about the men from Mars. Well, because Mr. Hitler made a good deal of sport of it, you know, and actually spoke of it in the great Munich speech, you know. And there were floats in Nazi parades.
Not much else to say.
That's right. Not much else to say. And it's supposed to show the corrupt condition and decadent state of affairs in democracies that the War of the Worlds went over as well as it did. I think it's very nice of Mr. Wells to say that not only I didn't mean it, but the American people didn't mean it.
That was our impression in England. We had articles about it, and people said, have you never heard of Halloween in America when everybody pretends to see ghosts?
Well, there was some excitement caused. I really can't belittle the amount that was caused, but I think that the people got over it very quickly, don't you?
What kind of excitement? Mr. H.G. Wells wants to know if the excitement wasn't the same kind of excitement that we extract from a practical joke in which somebody puts a sheet over his head and says, boo, I don't think anybody believes that that individual is a ghost, but we do scream and yell and rush down the hall. Mm-hmm. And that's just about what happened.
That's a very excellent description.
You aren't quite serious in America yet. You haven't got the war right under your chins, and the consequences you can still play with ideas of terror and conflict.
You think that's good or bad?
It's a natural thing to do until you're right up against it.
So it ceases to be a game.
And then it ceases to be a game.
Well, now, here's a thought. Some of Mr. H.G. Wells' writings are termed fantastic, and a few years ago, well might they have been conceived such. The Shape of Things to Come, which told of a long internecine war, was such a fantasy. But, Mr. Orson Welles, do you think that it's so fantastic in view of today's events?
It certainly is not so fantastic. And the one question that Mr. Wells has spoken of, not only in The Shape of Things to Come, but has hinted at or directly prophesied such a state of affairs following a wasting war and a return to a feudalism from which the world would find itself again. And today in Mr. Wells' lecture, he said quite the most interesting thing that I've heard in a long time. He said that he'd commenced just recently to ask himself if there was any reason why mankind should so emulate the phoenix and should so get itself out of its mess. He proposed a couple of solutions, but he did admit that there was a possible excuse for a gloomy point of view, and that it would be good to be realistic about it and not to dismiss the gloomy point of view anymore. Perhaps the time had come to look ahead, since the future, Mr. Wells's future, which we've always adored and never really understood, is suddenly upon us.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farm's WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.